Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next Toronto International Film Festival interview is with Sean Drummond and Michael Matthews as we talk about their new film. It's a Western that subverts the genre for sure, Five Fingers for Marseille. It's a Western that's, one of my favorites is High Plains Drifter, Outlaw Josie Wales, that comes up in our conversation, Once Upon a Time in the West and so on. But this is a Western that's entertaining, that was just a really long haul for these guys to put together. And you're gonna hear their passion, their commitment, and their thoughtful approach to making this film. It's about land. It's about land rights. It's about the European invasion in this part of the world. It's about colonization and about being relevant with regard to prejudice and race relations and the past and memory. How could you possibly pack that much into a Western? The answer is they did. And you're going to love this conversation. You're going to love the film. I hope you hear more about it. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my speaking and my writing, but also facetofacelive.ca for a whole host of new interviews coming up with regard to the film festival. And also rabble.ca for more information there about other interviews around issues that matter. Coming right up, Sean Drummond, Michael Matthews, about their new film, Five Fingers for Marseille. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two very special guests here today at the Toronto International Film Festival on the morning after of the world premiere of their new film, Five Fingers from Marseille.
For Marseille.
Sean, maybe I'm the one who's hungover. Sean Drummond and Michael Matthews, writer and director, producers as well. Yes. Thanks for joining me today, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So I heard something about hungry but not hungover. Was that the line as you sat down?
It was a long night.
I bet it was.
It was a late premiere. We premiered at 9:45 last night, and so we had a bit of a mixer beforehand because we wrote a bunch of casts, and we've got our co-producers from Game of Seven Films, who are New York-based, and we've got co-producers from Stage 5 Films, who are Cape Town-based with us because we're Cape Town-based filmmakers. And then we also had four of our actors, and we had our composer and our sound designer.
I saw the bus pull up in front of the light box. You had quite the crowd. It's great that you were able to. And by the way, I was going to say, celebrate it. Congratulations, and love the film. How can you not love a Western?
Yeah,
that's what we think.
So the land is all the scripture we need.
Yeah,
the land. What a beautiful line. What's going on there? I mean, is it fair to say this is more than a Western?
Yes. We're going deep quickly.
Yeah,
we're going deep quickly.
But it's good.
Yes. Well, are you, okay, let's go a little more superficial. How about you? You hungry and hungover or what?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
No, not too bad.
Not too bad.
But yeah, I think the land is a huge part of where the story originated. I mean, on a simple level, we came up with the story from just actually being on a bit of a road trip on for another project. And so it sort of started by looking at the land and seeing the space and thinking about the people and what and the changes that have happened in the land and the progress South Africa's gone, or you can call it progress, or you know. So I think from the beginning, a lot of that sort of who owns the land and who has the right to what kind of started to infuse the story from the beginning.
It's because it's obviously the story of. Land is the story of land is the story of colonization, and it's not just in Africa, but it's particularly relevant in Africa, and it's a big part of the conversation in South Africa now, is looking at land appropriation and going back and
whose land is it?
And we were traveling, like Mike says, traveling and finding these towns with European names, and the starting point was almost like a surreal curiosity going, I can't believe there's actually a town called Marseille.
Well, neither can I. And that was one of my first questions. Is this a fictional town?
No, it's a fictionalized version of a real town.
Is that the real sign, by the way?
No.
Okay, the sign's amazing. Love the sign. Yeah, so love the sign. Yeah.
But there really is a Barcelona and a Rome and a Hamburg and a Berlin and a Paris and a Marseille. And the actual Marseille is probably about the size of this hotel, you know, if even, like the ground floor, not the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we thought it's amazing that, not amazing, it's so relevant also to the Western thematically.
Sure.
To go, I'm going to waffle, so I apologize.
I'll bring it back
to a point. The Western was about conquest. Originally, Western was about conquest, and they were about, you know, the heroes were the ones who were taking the land.
Sure.
They were winning the land.
Yeah.
And then. When Western started getting revisionist and turning their gaze back on that, they started questioning all those Western, classic Western ideals. It became about, you know, questioning the taking of the land and questioning the drive for conquest and questioning the treatment of native people whereas, you know, traditionally the Indians, in big inverted commas, the Native Americans have been the bad guys and the heroes were coming to fight it off. As soon as you start... As soon as you go revisionist, and because it's been a long time struggling for the word, I want to say revisionisting. Mm-hmm. But that's definitely not a word.
No, we can create words.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. In fact, I had a university professor who said you should at least create a new word at least once a month.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
My son created the word philosophate.
Philosophate.
The other day. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. It's not bad.
It's not bad, eh? Yeah. Philosophating.
It's you philosophate, you grow it in a jar.
Exactly. Grow good thinking in a
jar. Good thinking in a jar. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm wondering why you guys don't teach a university course, and why you're based on the conversation we've already had 4 minutes in.
Yeah.
You're filmmakers. You're telling this important story through a highly entertaining, violent, engaging film.
Yeah. If I can.
Yeah, please.
Finish that.
Of course,
because I feel like I was on a thought.
As soon as you're revisionisting,
you start questioning the taking of the land in South Africa. So it's relevant to the Western. And because we drew on so many relevant. Different types of Westerns, we sort of drew on the classic era. We drew on the spaghetti era. We drew on the revisionist era to go, let's use the Western not in a gimmicky way, but let's use it as a way to, number one, tell a really engaging, complex, character-driven story that we want to see in South Africa, but also let's use it as a way to question, explore this idea of who took the land and what's the legacy of the pain and damage that was done. Because Five Fingers, it's all about these kids, the Five Fingers, who become the adults, the Five Fingers, who broken, scarred, and ultimately end up, you know, spoiler alert, facing each other down again for the sake of this town that they've been fighting for since they were kids, but haven't got the fight right.
And it's
because that damage was done in the beginning.
What's so lovely about it too is they all kind of represent one of us in a way. We've all had histories. We're all broken in our own way. You know, I mean, I'm sure a psychotherapist would disagree with me using the word broken, but we're all damaged goods, right? In some way, whether it's family or violence or education or lack thereof. So it's really quite lovely. But so you say you drew on Westerns. Let's get this one out of the way. Favorite Westerns? I mean, I certainly have a few of mine, but
I would say just on an enjoyment of cinema perspective, probably the age when I watched it as well, like Unforgiven was just a biggie because it was so like taking all the what you want out of a Western and then kind of doing something different where you're just watching a whole movie without that much action.
Yeah.
Build all the way to go, I just want to see Clint Eastwood be Clint, like the Western Clint Eastwood.
What's so interesting about Unforgiven, it was such a polarizing film. People either really loved it or hated it, right? Because they didn't quite get the turning of the Western on its head.
Yeah.
I thought it was a Western. Yeah. Nobody, there's no gunfights. What's going on?
Yeah, but it's all there the whole time. It's that like feeling like you want that, which is like you. Yeah. It's, that's a nice thing to work with as
it's
well.
It's interesting, right?
You as soon as people are firing guns, it's not that interesting, to be honest, unless it's done in a really unique way. We've seen it so much. So it's all about like everything around that, you know? Like Leone's ones, he was like the absolute pro of going, how do you maximize everything around the potential of violence and the build-up to it? And then the actual firing of the guns and whatever happens was generally quite quick or something.
Yes, yes.
So you feel like everything's around people shooting guns at each other, but it's not really. It's all about these long build-ups and this tension and the potential of violence and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Where does High Plains Drifter sit for you guys?
High Plains Drifter's not bad.
Yeah. It's pretty high on my list.
We immersed ourselves.
It's a God-fearing town, Sheriff.
Yeah. For over a year, we were just watching and reading Westerns.
Is that right? Reading, cool.
Well, being a writer,
yep.
I like to read scripts as well as watch the film. And what was interesting about a lot, because like we were saying earlier, there's always sort of social, political threads
absolutely.
To the Westerns.
Yeah.
And films like The Searchers are really about race relations and about, you know, prejudice and about... like I guess characters again dealing with those demons that's racism really, and in the '50s I feel like The Searchers was quite confrontational and was actually probably quite progressive at how it deals with race relations. You look at it now and of course it's the '50s so it's clunky as hell and you go it's quite racist, but reading the script, you could almost shoot the same script for The Searchers now, but with today's sensibility,
sadly,
make it something. Incredibly complex
and quite relevant to get still, you know,
without changing a word of the page, which is amazing. It's interesting to see how much is actually in there, even at the time.
First came the trains. Can you finish the phrase for me?
First came the trains, and then came the settlers, bringing their towns with them.
And they called it their land.
They called it their land. Yeah.
So this is imperialization. This is colonization, right? Lived out. What's so cool to me? What's so fun and engaging? Well, fun is the word that you've done it in a way. That is engaging and entertaining and fun. You're a part of the story, and yet you're being sort of you're not being I was going to say you're being preached to. You're not being preached to, okay, and that's the beauty. No. You're absolutely not.
But you're being brought into the conversation.
Yeah, you're being brought into a really interesting conversation if you're open to it.
Yeah. If you're looking for that sort of thing.
So is it true, Michael, that there are no good men? That's I believe, the log line for the film. Is that right?
I would say it's not true. I'd like to believe it's not true.
I'm with you, man.
But I think within that town. I think from what happens when they're kids and the way you have to deal with your demons when what they had to deal with it sort of leads to that scenario.
Yeah, it's a complex. I guess everybody's complex, and again because they're all broken in a way, and hopefully you know the film starts and ends with the same setup, which is again spoiler alert, but the fingers on the hill. You know,
I have to say, I was a little sad about that scene. I mean, it totally made sense. Mm. Totally made sense.
But I think it's...
Is that a Mexican standoff?
Yeah, for a Mexican standoff. And I think it's because we want the film, to be totally, you can engage with it on a story level and go, this is fun, this is complex. Well, these characters are interesting and I'm watching a real, genuine South African Western. And you don't need to engage in that deeper level unless you want to. And it's there if you want, and hopefully you take something away from it. I think it's all about... going back to the land, the film starts and ends with the land.
Yes.
And for this land really to be free for the country, because I think it's a microcosm for where South Africa is now and shaking off the shackles of apartheid, and how that's a sort of trial and error process going, well, for us really to start again, for the land really to be...
Which is the line right near the end of the film.
I think, unfortunately, in the story, at least those guys, they're too broken and they're holding... They're holding the town back, which
they're
is
the,
why
they're the sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
And it's the past. It's the cycle continuing. You sort of have to free yourself from the issues of the past so that a newer generation can kind of be free of the issues.
Yes.
That's a big part of it, trying to go. The cycle keeps repeating if the new generation keeps getting brought into the same issues or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, you must have noticed last night the guy who introduced the film talked about the indigenous rights here in Canada and sort of said we're on stolen land.
Yeah.
Right? And that's happening more and more in Canada. Yeah. And there's a shift. And that's going to take years, probably my kids' kids to really be in a place where, hey, this is where we're at, where it's actually a part of the dialogue and a part of their worldview. I do a lot of work in Cambodia. There's this notion of transgenerational trauma.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
South Africa, for crying out loud. Yeah. I'm getting goosebumps. How deep does that go?
Yeah, I mean, right? People think things can change quickly, and they just can't. There's just too much, you know? It's already been 20 years since the end of apartheid, and that seems like a long time, but realistically, it's all still pretty fresh stuff.
It's a blip.
And in a way, a lot of what's happening now is everyone's starting to have the conversations and the dealing with the issues that should have been more addressed at that time. Like a lot kind of got missed and certain conversations
swept under the carpet, right?
Yeah, like it's new and we're good and now we go forward all.
Let's just not talk about it.
We're really happy to talk about it because I think it's important. It's important.
Oh, but what I mean is, isn't that?
Oh, yes.
That's the sentiment, right?
That's a long note.
So you really are hungover. Yeah. Has nothing to do with hunger. No, it's like that idea. Crying out loud.
We're all good. We're good. It's a rainbow nation now, and people want to believe that, but it's you can't just. It's like a little quick plaster. It's not gonna deal with. So a lot of stuff's coming up now, and it's very interesting because on an international level, it feels like a lot of the same conversations are happening. Like you're saying, especially in the US and in Canada, obviously, I think there's a lot more forward thinking about where things are at compared to,
Well, you'd like America, to think so, right? And then you start reading the news and you go, I'm not sure how forward thinking you are here.
It seems like the world has sort of taken a bit of a step back.
It kind of does right now, doesn't it?
Yeah. The nationalist fervor and...
I don't know what is going on with nationalism.
I don't know. It's scary though.
It is.
And you sort of see it in the States. It seems like the most terrifying, but I guess it's happening with Brexit in the UK as well. And we thought we were on this great path, maybe because life is cyclical. Look at the US and how Barack Obama was the first black president. And I'm sure, definitely in the beginning, you had this feeling of, okay, like tides are turning. Yeah. Like we're entering a new era. Yeah. And now we've swung so far.
Yes.
Back.
Yeah. It's really, it's quite, well, it's this is trauma. I think it seems to me coming to the fore, not dealing with stuff from your past, which, we're talking about memory. We're talking about how we talk about how we were raised and what our histories were, essentially, which is what is so beautiful about your film. Is that kind of connected to the scripture and the land?
The scripture and the land,
the history, the memory, this is what's so important. We need to know.
Yeah.
We need to know not just because this is academic.
Yeah.
This is actually about identity.
Yeah.
The voice.
The land is all scripture we need. Is sort of, we are tied to the land and our truth and our meaning and all of that is tied to the land.
I love Tao's character. I mean, I love, there's a few characters in the film I really love, but I always love those characters who kind of dance between that, I hate to say, I'm going to say it anyway, the good and evil, that polarizing kind of stepping in, stepping out. You want to be, I wanted to be his friend. He's the kind of guy I'd like to hang out with and have a drink and a smoke together with, right? Maybe take down somebody else in a gunfight, maybe together, So, but isn't that interesting, right? About that whole good and evil thing, that holding that tension. Mm.
Yeah.
And he plays it so well.
Easy
to draw out of a guy like that? Is that the actor? Is that the direction? Is that the writing? Is it a...
I think it's a combination of all, but he just has that energy, that sort of charisma where he doesn't have to do much and it's good,
That's nice.
Do you know what I mean? He's good to watch. Clint Eastwood was the pro at that. Like that was quite a new thing. Or who was it before that?
Outlaw Josie Wales. Also another big favorite.
It's like that. And that's a very Western thing as well. Like not getting much from your main character, Like the more you don't know about them, although there's a lot, there's quite a rich backstory and all that for us.
Yeah.
There's still like a lot of unknown.
Yeah, the man with no name, right?
20 years, and we don't know exactly what he's done or where he's been, and like what he really wants and that sort of stuff. You sort of there's a lot under there, and you're trying to work it out the whole time, and trying to figure out what is it he really wants, or what's he gonna do.
There's a mystery there. There's kind of a there's an unknown, right? And yet this guy actually, there's a difference.
He cares.
He cares.
Of course.
Yeah. He cares. He's a good guy. There's a moral fiber there somewhere, right? Even though he's a killer.
Yeah.
Because the first act of him killing is almost accidental in a sense, but that it probably came from a, I wouldn't say righteous justice maybe, but still, in a sense of, I want to make things right. Have to do something.
Yeah. Compulsion to do the right thing. And I think you've got all these characters. We had an amazing cast in the film, but they're all very still, and they're all, I guess the Western always would present these stoic characters with these backstories that you didn't know. And maybe would see in flashbacks. And what we did that was different is that we spend the first 15, 20 minutes of the film with them as kids. And that really establishes a lot of those we understand why they're broken, hopefully by the end. And it rings true on a deeper level when they go back up the mountain to face each other down, because you understand where it's come from.
Well, you kind of, in a way, as a fairly young parent, you kind of see them as kids in a way still, which I think is really brilliant writing and the way you juxtapose that. And
you know what's in there, deeper in there.
Yeah. There's a reason for this. There's context, there's history, and so on. Mm. what's with the one white character in the film who's pretty much a buffoon? Can I use the word buffoon?
Yeah.
But quite fun too. I think my fave line is how many bullet holes is that? 60. Yeah. I can't remember the line exactly. 60. 60. Yeah. That's a lot of bullet holes.
That's a lot of holes.
Could we make it an even 20?
Yeah. That's right.
It was partly to have some light in the film.
Yeah.
And I think also the Western genre sort of, you know, we had nods to the genre. There was often the drunk sidekick who's a bit of a comic relief.
Sure.
But often it was the drunk Mexican sidekick, and so in a way we wanted to subvert that by making it, you know,
a token white character.
Yeah, that's
kind
right.
Of, yeah.
It's about time.
But it's also true to
there's so many of us.
Yeah, sure. But it's also, you know, like my grandfather was a traveling salesman there, so it's also something that's true. And there's this question of, am I relevant still? You know, how do I fit into this world where the country's changed?
Sure.
Yep. The lands, like this town is, this new frontier has replaced what there was, and do I still fit in? Kind of, I don't. And again, you know, white people in South Africa at the end of apartheid sort of didn't have to change. Like Mike was saying, it's everything's cool now, guys. No, we're all the same. No, it's fine. Mm. And
but what is anyone actually doing?
Yeah, and so for him, he has to make the choice to actually join the struggle and get involved. You know, sometimes a man has to take a stand.
It's such a great... how can you not love those scenes when everybody... Yeah. Pitches in basically.
Yeah, and it's sort it's of so great. Like, yeah, it's
I love the gun you gave him too.
the biggest gun and his reaction to it too.
Yeah, very Clint Eastwood as well. Yeah. Very Dirty Harry.
Yeah, but you have to, you know, you have to engage. I think you can't sit in the corner of the bar and drink yourself into oblivion and pretend like this change doesn't affect you. You've got to step up and be part
of it. So the ghost. I mean, now that's a guy that personifies evil to me.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not so sure there's any good in this guy. I don't know. Maybe there was at a time. And when you compare him to Tao's character, right? And just, I don't know, there's something else going on there.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because without him, the story's much more kind of grounded, the entire thing. It's about the kids, the five kids, and then the five adults and what they become. And he kind of comes in, just to give some sort of context, but he sort of comes in halfway through, and he's almost like a bit of a, we've always seen him like a grim reaper.
He
comes in as a judge.
I can't put my finger on who he reminds me of, some other character or a play that I've seen, or you know what I mean, some Shakespearean thing. I don't know what it is, but there's something going on there.
He pretty much comes in and just uproots all the things people aren't dealing with. So that's the idea. Right. It's almost like sometimes what's interesting is I think about watching a lot of the scenes that he's in with all the characters, and the way he gets under the surface with everyone's issues, and he basically turns, like, uproots all the issues between the characters and brings it all out as this sort of judge. He sees himself as this anointed judge. But he's... Oh, shit, I lost my train of thought.
No, that's good.
It was a good one. It was a good one. You were on.
I was going somewhere. Hang on. Let me just drink another coffee.
That's right. A little
he
more.
He forces him to confront.
Confronting the issues in the town. It's interesting to watch some of the scenes and imagine him not even in them. And it's almost like these, because he's got these kind of monologues and this talking, and he's almost like the devil in the ear of these characters to a degree, or the kind of judge. And if you took him out a lot of the scenes, it would be the characters just dealing with their issues in a way. Uh-huh. It's quite funny. Like if you watch it like that, you could almost imagine he doesn't exist. He's just sort of come in to go, you guys need to face up to each other, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Honestly, one of the greatest lines... I've heard in a long time about the lightning strike. I won't give it away. You got to see the film, guys, out there. But it's brilliant.
Thank you. Lovely.
I mean, there's something quite almost metaphysical or spiritual about the ghost. Like, you kind of wonder, is this Well, it's the High Plains Drifter in a way, right? Yeah, exactly, who was that guy, yeah, right? Yeah.
Was he actually the devil, right?
Yeah.
And so, is this guy even human?
My mother was struck by lightning on the night I was born, and I came out like this. It's interesting.
There's the line. It's wonderful. Hopefully it'll dry. It's a great line.
It's in the teaser.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. You do use it in the teaser trailer. Yeah, that's cool.
But it's also you get the sense from him sometimes where you think, is that true or isn't that true? Or is it only because there's a lightning storm right now, he's manifesting his own kind of higher story? Yeah. It's almost like a little bit like Batman Joker. It's very different, but where you're not sure.
Yeah.
Where it comes from, is there truth behind what he's saying, or is he just stirring?
Isn't that part of power and oppression?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, that story sort of builds. The legend grows.
Yeah.
It may not even be true.
Yeah.
But this is what we think this character, this ghost, really is. Yeah. Right, which is so wonderful about that kind of writing. And what I love about what you guys do, filmmakers, writers, and so on, is there's so many unintended implications. Mm-hmm. That authorial, sorry for the academic phrase, but that authorial intention.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. What's going on here? What's going on at the heart level? You guys have been in the, 10-year project now?
Yeah.
The conversations, the people you've met, the photos, the freezing to death. How does that all tease its way out in the film? I just think it's wonderful. So the ghost says, and we're going to have to wrap it up in a couple of minutes, but the ghost says, calls Tao nobody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I love the irony, because he's everybody.
Yeah.
Like, not only is he everybody, he's the human link that kind of allows... I don't know, the next, am I reaching here, but
no,
the next redemptive step for this town?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
Hopefully he's, because I guess he sort of starts and ends the fight.
He
kicks it off.
That's nice.
He kicks it off inadvertently, but with that sort of righteous act that takes it too far. And he's the one who ends it eventually by deciding he's got to turn that fight once and for all.
Right.
Take responsibility,
which is really nice that you don't let him get away with it in a sense.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's because the ghost is there and he's prying at everybody's, he's prying at the cracks, you know, and the cracks are us and the cracks are South Africa. And the ghost is, he's the repo. He's the judge who's come in to force them to confront. And when he decrees judgment on the town, he's sort of going, this town's stillborn. It's broken.
Right.
It's not
working.
There's almost an ability to him because he's coming in and he doesn't want anything other than to force these. He feeds on that brokenness, but he's in a way there's something quite righteous about him because he can be a judge, he can be the devil, he can be a messiah. He's forcing that same change. He's going, I'm going to force you to confront this brokenness and I'm the catalyst for change. I'm the catalyst.
Kind of makes you wonder what went on in prison. You know, what kind of transformation or redemptive act, you know, it's an interesting comment on that, you know, that restoration, that reconciliation that occurred, because you only give us a little taste of that basically, right? On the day he gets out, essentially.
Pretty
right?
Much,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We don't get any more context than that. So sadly, we got to wrap it up.
Wow. I feel like we're just getting going.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? We'll need to do a part two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. What
part two, decolonization.
Yeah.
Kidding, isn't it? I mean, there's just, and this is what I so love about a great film and a great story, and you guys have, and great performances too, by the way. Please pass on my regards to the cast.
Absolutely.
You must have had a lot of fun. It sounds, I read some of the notes about the challenges you faced. It must have been pretty tough out there on the set and so on, but financing, I mean, it's been a long journey.
It's been, I think on all aspects, it was not an easy film to make. And then on a production level, it was definitely harder than we thought it would be.
Yes.
It was already super ambitious, a 5-week shoot, and we could barely get what we needed done. It was about 3 to 4 minutes of final film that you're shooting a day
that will
end up in the movie, you know, which is so much to get through. And then we had rain, snow, hail.
Yeah,
any,
I mean, it was
all sorts. And
Any lightning strikes?
Yeah, there was lightning.
Yeah.
And when we went in, I was like, oh, well, you know, when the stuff comes up, which it probably won't, because it's not supposed to rain in that month of the year.
Of course not.
Then it rains for about a week.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought we'll use it, you know, it'll be in the movie and you'll feel it and all that. And then it doesn't work like that because the schedule's just a complete mix, you know.
Yes,
the final scene of the film, which I won't give the spoiler away, but that was actually... For three of the characters, it was their very first day on set. That final standoffs on the clock.
Yep. Isn't that
so
just,
it was such
I love,
a
Makes me smile when I hear stuff like that.
It was their very first scene. That's crazy. It was so daunting for me. I was like, oh, crap.
I mean, we don't have time to get into this now, but is that just because of production schedule, location, you're here, we got to get it done, and then we're moving on?
Yeah. And you try so hard to make it a bit more linear so you can work with the character. That scene felt like that, so let's put a bit more of that in this scene.
Yeah.
But it's just, you've got to know it all before you even start making, and it's just... you kind of got to get it right out of order. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I think that's a testament to the acting and to Mike's directing, just to be able to go into that situation. No, because if the emotion of that scene doesn't land, the film doesn't work.
Right.
And so for everybody involved to step up and go, okay, we know what this has to be, and knock it out the park is pretty amazing. Yeah. We were an amazing. We are, Mike and I have worked together for almost 12 years. And our creative team have worked with us, including sound designer, composer, editor, director, photographer, Sean.
Nice.
You know, so there's a lot of shorthand trust, and then Dylan.
Yeah, trust is there. There's a whole other thing that we could talk about, right? Yeah. Just the trust there that sort of translate into the film and into the story. It's a real theme for me too, in the work that I do personally in sort of international development and social change, and even these conversations. A good podcast interview, you've got to develop a little bit of rapport and hopefully a tiny bit of trust, right? Because you can't really get to the stuff that matters if you don't, you know?
Yeah.
So, hey, listen, congratulations again. Couple more, so premiere, world premiere was last night.
Yep.
Yes.
Got a couple more showings. Yes. Are you all here for those?
Most of our cast are leaving today.
Oh, too bad. Okay.
Yeah. But so we've got a screening tomorrow morning.
Okay.
With more Q&A and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And then one more on Saturday. And then we've got a couple more festivals. We're doing Fantastic Fest down in Austin.
Good.
Just after this. And we're doing BFI London the beginning of October.
Nice.
And then a few more I don't think we're allowed to talk about yet. But,
a little covert action going on there.
Yeah.
Nice to hear. Well, listen, guys, such a pleasure chatting today. Five fingers for Marseille, Sean Drummond and Michael Matthews here with us today at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Thanks so much.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.